Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We used to hear all the time, lock them up and throw away the key. Get tough on crime. But now we've got 2.5 million people in our prison system, and it's expensive for taxpayers, and it doesn't really seem to be helping many people. Much of the prison population is made up of nonviolent drug criminals, and now we're hearing calls from policymakers to do something about our overcrowded prisons. To help talk about the future of prison reform this half hour, Vikrant Reddy is a policy analyst for the Center for Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and Ana Yanez Correa, she is a executive director at the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Hi, it's great to be on.
All right, and we do open our phone lines. The number is 614-8980. We want to hear from folks who have some ideas or opinions or just something to offer about prison reform here in Texas and across, and federally. So let me ask you, Vikrant Reddy, you guys, you're typically at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, a conservative kind of a group. But you come on board saying that we need to do prison reform. Why?
Well, I don't think there's anything unconservative about it. I mean, at the end of the day, I think everybody knows that our principles, first principles, go back to being skeptical of large, costly government. And we exercise those principles when it comes to things like education, when it comes to health care, when it comes to welfare benefits, all of these kinds of things. And that same skeptical eye needs to be turned towards the prison system. There's no reason to just cut a blank check to that sector of the government.
And Ana Yanez Correa, you guys are coming from this from a different direction. What's your take?
Actually, we also believe in accountability and holding bureaucracy accountable, but we are very much, we definitely believe in social services and providing people the tools that they need so that they can live successfully, and that involves government. But when it comes to criminal justice, as my colleague Vikrant has said, is that, you know, Texas spends $3.1 billion a year on the mere incarceration of people. And they TDCJ, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, hires more people than Google does. And when you think about the billions of dollars that taxpayers are wasting, we also want to look at the outcomes. And we see that people are not coming out better. And we also see that the vast majority of people in prison are there for nonviolent, non-sex-related crimes. So why not invest our money, our taxpayer dollars, on strategies that actually get to the root causes of crime and that minimize, safely minimize, the number of people going to prison?
Vikrant, let me ask you, how do we do this? How do we get to a point where we can reduce the number of people in prison? And where do you think is a good level?
Well, I think that the place we start is by drawing some kind of a reasonable distinction between violent offenders and nonviolent offenders. I would say that when it comes to violent offenders, I don't have a problem with the lock them up and throw away the key philosophy. I say, show me where to sign. But when it comes to nonviolent offenders, so much of the evidence overwhelmingly shows that incarceration can often be a counterproductive solution. They come out worse than they started. They have criminal records that make it very difficult for them to find jobs. They have a difficult time supporting their families. They can't pay restitution to the victims. They have drug treatment needs. All of these different concerns are not really adequately addressed by the prison system. So there's this saying that is common in our field. I know Ana knows it. We like to say that prisons are for people we're scared of, not people we're mad at. And I think we ought to draw that distinction, and that's the perfect place to start.
So, Vikrant, how does that work? As a person gets convicted of a crime, and instead of putting them in prison, what do? Let them go free?
No, you certainly don't do that. People have to be held accountable. But we have all kinds of alternatives to incarceration that would treat people in the community. We have things like drug courts. We have things like electronic monitoring and swift and certain sanctions whenever people violate parole and probation. And I want to note that I really think that's a tough-on-crime strategy. Whenever we have a strategy where people violate parole or probation and we give them a warning and then a second warning and then a third warning and then finally give them a very heavy sentence once they violated the sixth or seventh time, I don't necessarily see that as tough on crime. I think that you should be punished, not immensely, but, you know, reasonably, a modest, small punishment the second you violate. And actually, we found through a lot of research that people respond psychologically to swift and certain sanctions a lot better than they do to far-off, remote, heavy-handed sanctions. You'll get better results that way.
So, Ana, I mean, if you get your car broken into, someone smashes a window, they steal your whatever you got in your car, your laptop or something, your GPS, And then you find out, well, that's not considered a violent crime, so they don't really go to prison, they don't get punished, so nothing happens.
Well, actually, that's what's happening right now. Everybody has gotten their car broken into. I certainly have. Everybody in my office has. But guess what happens is that the criminal justice system, as it stands right now, does not meet the needs of the victim. What does that mean? Do you get your stuff back? Do you get your purse back? Do you get your CDs that got stolen? No. What happens is that we, the victim, ends up paying a lot of money by incarcerating and putting somebody and basically naming him or her a felon for the rest of their lives, which, like Vikrant said, prevents them from living responsibly. Why? Because if they have a felony, they can't get the job, they can't get housing, they can't get identification. It's really hard for them. So really what we're asking for is for us to be smart on crime. We're asking for people to think, okay, so this person broke into a car. Well, let's do a risk assessment. Let's find out why this person broke into a car. Okay, so it was a drug problem. Okay, well, this person needs drug treatment. Okay, so let's put him in the appropriate drug treatment program. Let's do follow-up and aftercare of that individual, and let's make sure that there's victim restitution. What Vikrant was talking about is basically making sure that the victims get their stuff back. I've spoken to a lot of people who have been victims of property offenses, and what they want is their stuff back. And right now, the criminal justice system is a complete failure in that. Nobody gets their stuff back, and so nobody ends up, you know, being satisfied. So punishment is not satisfying the victim, and we're actually just creating a more of a financial burden.
So Vikrant, if we do the drug court and the ankle bracelets, how much does that save us?
Oh, it saves us lots of money. In fact, I'll just give you a quick story that kind of gives you a sense of the kinds of savings that we're talking about. In 2007, the Legislative Budget Board, which is sort of like an internal think tank for the state legislature, they issued a report and told the legislature that we would need to spend an extra $2 billion on 17,000 new prison beds that would be necessary by the year 2012. They said, look, the state is growing. You have more people. You have more prisoners. It's just necessary. It can't be avoided. Well, this is Texas, after all, and the legislators were not too enthusiastic about spending that kind of money. They said, gosh, $2 billion, is there any way to do this a little more cheaply? So instead, they took a far smaller amount, I think $200 million or so, and they put it into things like the expansion of state drug courts, the expansion of electronic monitoring, better parole and probation, you know, parole and probation with teeth, as I called it earlier. They doubled down on all of these things. Well, the years went by, 2012 rolled around, and it turns out that we did not need those 17,000 prison beds. Crime continued to drop in this state. It's been dropping for a long time now. It's at its lowest rate since 1968. And we did it not by spending $2 billion, but by spending only $200 million. In fact, we closed three prisons over the last 3 years. It's really been a great success.
We're talking about prison reform, and conservatives and liberals are saying that Texas is spending too much money on prisons and guards and putting people away for too long of time. And when they come out of prison, they're not able to integrate back into society, so that they end up doing more wrong things and going back to prison. We want to hear what you have to say about that. The number is 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Good afternoon. It's 3:45. I'm Steve Short. There is a report of an accident on the east side on northbound Loop 410 at FM 78.
KSTX traffic is made possible by rentatoyotasanantonio.com.
There's a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and this evening. Otherwise, it's going to be partly cloudy tonight with a low around 76. Currently, some showers and thunderstorms are moving westward across the area, and it's 98 degrees.
Support for KSTX comes from the Majestic Theater, presenting multifaceted artist Harry Connick Jr., performing a collection of original songs from his new album, Every Man Should Know, Thursday, November 14th. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Have you ever told a friend, I heard this story on TPR today? Now you don't have to wait to share your favorite stories. Use our one-click social media buttons to post stories to Facebook or Twitter. Sharing the best of Texas Public Radio is just a click away on TPR.org.
Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about prison reform in the sense that we have too many people in our prisons and it's costing us too much money and it doesn't seem to be doing society a whole lot of good to lock up that many people for that long of a time. With me on the phone, we have Ana Yanez Correa. She's Executive Director of the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, and also Vikrant Reddy. He's a Policy Analyst for the Center of Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Gotten a couple of comments online. One of them is, if we can't afford to air condition our prisons and this is killing people in the heat, we need to close them down. So we know that Texas does not air condition its prisons. In fact, there was a prison down in Kennedy, Texas, where they had no water not that long ago. It was pretty tough for these people to endure. But, you know, prison is a tough place to be, and I'm sure that people are not excited about being sent there in Texas, Vikrant.
Oh, I think I'll probably let Ana field that question. I know that her group does a lot more work on the conditions of confinement than we do. But probably the one thing that I will say is that prison is a deeply unpleasant place. I mean, no matter what we do, it's always going to be an extremely unpleasant place. And it's still a necessary part of any kind of society. But at the end of the day, we need to be really, really careful to make sure that we're not putting people into prisons who don't belong there.
Ana, what's your reaction to the heat conditions in our prisons?
Well, the heat condition is a symptom to a much greater problem that comes that actually talks about lack of oversight and accountability of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Now, every single county, just about every single county has a county jail, and they are actually supervised by the Texas Commission on Jail Standards, which ensures that the counties are not being sued for not complying with standards. But the Texas Department of Criminal Justice does not have an entity that identifies, has oversight capabilities. And that's been a major flaw of the criminal justice system. So even though, you have the right and the left saying the same things, that we need to improve, there has to be accountability, there has to be ways of safely minimizing who ends up behind bars, we're also falling short on having a mechanism that has oversight of these prisons. We also have to remember that not everybody that ends up in prison actually committed the crime. We have the number one number of exonerees that were there and that were sent because of the flawed, way of the criminal justice system. And we also have to remember that, when you are incarcerating somebody, it's not just the conditions that the people that are incarcerated have to go by, but also the impact that it has on the staff, the men and women who are working in the prisons. It's the same type of conditions. So, ultimately for us, like Vikrant said, there's very little that you can do to really improve the conditions of confinement. So to us, we want to minimize the number of people ending up in prison. And some of these prisons are, 100 years old. So even, just common sense, you want to get rid of those prisons. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just too difficult to maintain. And a lot of them are understaffed. And it's just not a situation that you want to put anybody in, especially if they don't belong there.
All right, to the phones we go. The number is 614-8980. Barbara is on the line. Barbara, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I suppose really I have a question. Because of the felony convictions or even deferred adjudication for drug crimes, when the person's released, as was already mentioned on the show, it's next to impossible for them to find really good employment. It impedes their ability to find housing. It impedes their ability to move forward with their life. And even there used to be deferred adjudication, but with the Patriot Act, that is no longer hidden from employers. And so what happens with all the incarceration based on drug crimes, it absolutely makes an underclass. And people who have families and who are really intent on trying to do the right thing and move forward with their life are unable to do it because of a conviction or even arrest. And across the country, there's a movement to ban the box so that when people who do have a record for drugs in particular apply for housing or apply for employment, they do not have to indicate that they have this conviction. And so because there's not that many community services available here in San Antonio, mental health or support systems, and then, on top of that, being unable to find suitable...
Okay, Barbara, thank you for that comment. We're going to get our guest to respond to that. Vikrant Reddy, what do you think about Barbara's comments?
Oh, gosh, I think I would agree almost entirely. You know, a lot of the work that we do at the Texas Public Policy Foundation recently is focused on problems surrounding occupational licensing and the difficulty for somebody who has just been released from incarceration, often for a low-level drug crime, of being able to obtain an occupational license. It's unbelievable. The anecdotes that are told about this are just mind-boggling. I'll tell you one story. Concerns a guy who wanted to install, I think it's some kind of an air conditioning system or something, at the governor's mansion. He had been locked up for some kind of a low-level crime briefly at another state in the South. I want to say it was Georgia or North Carolina, somewhere in the Southeast. Now, he had done his time. He came to Texas. By the way, he had already installed a system like this in that state's governor's mansion, but he got to Texas, and because of the unique nature of the laws, he was unable to get the requisite license and do the work that was required here in Texas. It's absolutely silly, and there's so many people who are caught up in this situation. They have very little hope other than reoffending.
So, and when it comes to deferred adjudication, there's about 290,000 people in Texas right now who are struggling in terms of deferred adjudication. And what people don't understand is that deferred adjudication will be treated as a conviction. So one of the things that we want to, TPPF and us have been working on is making sure that there's truth in what people say in terms of deferred adjudication. And that's another reason why we also support expungement for certain cases. Now, prosecutors, especially people like prosecutors like in San Antonio, are, hate any idea of expungement, and they hate anything that has to do with, getting rid of the record. But we're caught in this situation to where people need the tools that they need to live responsibly. They need to find jobs. They need to have housing. And, I mean, if you don't have an expungement, the ceiling is not going to be enough of records, and having a deferred is treated like conviction. So what choices do we have? We don't have a lot of options other than just to go for expungement.
Now, we have a private prison system. They don't want to give up their prisoners because that makes them money. So are we having to deal with them lobbying not to change the laws?
You want me to answer that? Because,
yeah.
I think Anna and I may have different answers. Anna, I'll let you go first.
Yeah. We are 100% against anything that has to do with privatization of facilities. And the reason why is because when you create a private entity, you're creating a private interest. And so, like you said, when you have reforms that are using common sense and evidence-based practices to safely minimize the number of people entering prison, if they start losing money, then they're going to fight, and they have fought in other states anytime there's any reforms. In Texas, the private prisons have actually calmed down, and we're actually closing two privately run facilities in the state of Texas, which is historical. But it hasn't been easy. I mean, the lobbyists are still around. They're still fighting anything that deals with closing a private prison because they're profiting from that. We as an organization take a very strong stand that you cannot create interests that profit from, the hardships of people, that profit from confinement. And we know how they make money. They make money off of, not providing good services, not paying correctional staff. That's how they make money, and they're not, they're not open to open records requests like, state facilities. So this session, there have been efforts in previous sessions that we have successfully defeated, and this session, even though they did not want the state jails, the private state jails to close, that was also defeated. So we're really blessed in that sense, and we hope to continue to have a trajectory of blocking these special interests.
Vikrant, you want to defend the private prison industry?
Well, it's not so much that I'll defend it. I actually agree with Anna's entire critique, but I think there's also another component. That component is unionization of prisons and prison guards and, you know, public sector labor unions. You find that they also have a very strong interest in maintaining and increasing incarceration. In fact, the most notorious example is one that probably everybody listening to this show is familiar with. It's California's Three Strikes, You're Out law. That law passed, I think, back in 1994. If you take a look at the records for who was lobbying for that most vigorously, it was public sector labor unions in California because, of course, maximizing incarceration maximizes jobs. So I think what I would say at the end of the day is that we all agree, most of us agree, I hope, that prisons are a necessary evil in society, and no matter who runs them, whoever is involved in running the prison has an interest in seeing the prison enhanced and increased and the number of people incarcerated as large as possible. So we've all got to be extremely careful. I think it is a societal obligation, whether the prison is public or private, we've all got to be very, very cautious.
So, Vic Grant, when you see Eric Holder, the Attorney General, saying things like reduce the drug penalties for marijuana, is that a sign that we are seeing some changes that will become part of prison reform?
Yeah, I think that's a sign of change. I think it's notable. You know, here at TPPF, we've launched a national campaign called Right on Crime. And the signatories to that national campaign include Newt Gingrich and Grover Norquist, Ed Meese, Bill Bennett, you know, a lot of very prominent conservatives from all over the country. And while it is true that Eric Holder made this terrific speech a few weeks ago, it's also true that that speech followed up on bills that had already been filed by Rand Paul and Mike Lee. These are very strong conservatives in the Senate. So you see, people are approaching this from different angles, but they're getting to the same place. That makes me optimistic.
Vic Grant Reddy, he is the policy analyst for the Center of Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. We also had Anna Yanez Correa. She's the executive director of the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. Thank you both for joining us on The Source this afternoon. And The Source, thanks for listening. This is I'm David Martin Davies. This is KSTX San Antonio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.